This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop. Because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had one note: tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome. Happy hump day to you, America, wherever you might be. This is the Todd Starnes radio program, and we have got a lot of ground to cover today, including this crazy hearing yesterday involving the Smithsonian, and just a few takeaways from what happened yesterday. By the way, our telephone number, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926 if you plan on calling in today. But I've got a little bee in my bonnet about this, and wanted to hear your take on it. So look, our good buddy, Congressman Tim Burchett from East Tennessee, he's been holding DOGE. He's chairman of the DOGE. It's a subcommittee on DOGE, and they're looking at the Smithsonian and the museums of the Smithsonian. You know, a lot of people think the Smithsonian is just one museum. It's not. It's a lot of museums, all funded by your tax dollars, by the way. And I'll get to that in just a moment. So anyway, yesterday there was a hearing. The lady in charge of the Museum of American History was taken to the woodshed by Republicans. And she was asked all sorts of questions, and we got a lot of audio from this. And she was asked all sorts of questions. We learned, for example, that one Mickey Mouse is apparently, well, racist. And she said, well, no, not really racist. But it turns out that they really do believe that Mickey Mouse is racist. They believe that he is an example of blackface, which is sort of weird because most of Mickey's face is white. It's the ears. So his ears are black. I just always thought he was a mouse. I didn't think he was like a Klan member. I didn't think he was like a Klan mouse, but apparently who knew? So anyway, they're saying that Mickey Mouse is racist, and also being polite is racist. And all sorts of stuff. It goes on and on and on. This whole thing of radical, you know, white supremacy, the whole nine yards. And this is all happening inside the museums. And it's really a source of frustration, I think, for a lot of people. Because, you know, you take your kids, you take the wife and the kids, and you go to the museums, and you think you're actually looking at American history, when in fact you're getting this rather skewed view of what American history is all about. So I thought Brandon Gill, I like this guy. Brandon Gill is the son-in-law of Dinesh D'Souza. He's a congressman from Texas, and he's a smooth operator. He's a likable version of Ted Cruz. And he's got it together. So anyway, here he is talking about Mickey Mouse. Cut 18, please.
Is Mickey Mouse racist?
Mickey Mouse is not racist.
It's not racist. According to the Smithsonian Institution, one of your exhibits referenced Mickey Mouse as representing, quote, vestiges of longstanding traditions of blackface minstrelsy. Would you describe that as racist?
No, the historical trajectory of the origins of Mickey Mouse tied directly
to... So Mickey Mouse is rooted in racism. Is that your testimony?
No, sir. It's rooted in minstrelly.
Minstrelsy. You don't think a blackface minstrelsy is racist?
It has certain obvious racial overtones that have been well documented.
You think that that's problematic, that Mickey Mouse also has those racial overtones?
It's not for me to determine what's problematic. It's determined to me what's accurate.
Is that right?
The voice you heard there, the female voice, Anthea Hartig, the director of the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. And you heard her say, Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse racist? That is just goofy, ladies and gentlemen. Goofy, I say. Goofy. Anyway, it gets worse. And he called her out on this whole thing. There's a whole paper, and you can download it on the Smithsonian's website about all the things that are examples of white supremacy. For example, objectivity is a form of racism, and then it turns out being polite is a form of racism as well. Cut 19, please.
Is it important to be polite?
Excuse me, sir?
Is it important to be polite?
Yes, sir.
It's also interesting because the same mass action toolkit that your organization has been promoting references politeness as a defining characteristic of white supremacy culture. Ma'am, are you a white supremacist?
No, sir.
You're not? Can you help me square why your organization says that being polite is part of being a white supremacist?
I'm not exactly familiar with that passage of the mass action toolkit, which is
I can show you the passage right here.
Pardon me?
I said I just read you the passage from it.
The woman's a complete moron, but they've got all of this and they're promoting all of this woke ideology at the Smithsonian museums. And by the way, it's also in the Smithsonian bookstore. This is Congressman Michael Cloud. And he was asking questions about what books were actually being sold at the Smithsonian. Because, again, it's about American history, so you would think that the books they sold would, be about American history, right? Well, not necessarily. Take a listen.
What would you say is the most influential book in American history?
So if I may go back to your second question.
What would you say is the most influential book in
America? May I go back to your second question?
You can answer the one I just asked you.
Well, as a historian, it's probably hard to choose which is the most influential book in the United States history, but I can tell you what's the most influential document, and that is the Declaration of Independence, which appears in different ways
most
at least four
book.
Or five times.
The founders quoted one book more than any other book.
The founders were very well read, and as you know, Thomas Jefferson's library became the core of the Library of Congress.
Yes, and that book would have been the Bible. Secondly, would have been Common Sense by Thomas Paine. Now, I went to the bookstore. I couldn't find Common Sense in the bookstore. I did find, you know, these books. Here's George Takei. It rhymes with Takei. A book in which he talks about, you know, one young man lusting after another. I'm not sure why this is in our American History Museum in the kids section, mind you. That's you think is important to have in the American History Museum?
So George Takei, as you know, the actor from Star Trek, was incarcerated during World War II as the result of Executive Order 906. And his children's book, I think, is a beautiful
story. Who made the
story.
Decision to put that in there but not Common Sense?
Look, it's a great question. I think the irony was lost on everyone that it turns out there is literally no common sense in the Smithsonian museums. It's just beyond me. And it goes on and on and on. We've got all of this audio from the hearings. And it was terrific. It was riveting. It was must watch TV or must listen to radio. It was powerful. I would give it, Dylan, I haven't gotten on Rotten Tomatoes, but I would give it a good ranking over there.
Like a 90% perchance?
Is that good? I don't know.
That's pretty high.
I never can figure out how Rotten Tomatoes works or why it's good to have a higher rating on a Rotten Tomato.
It's like the few critics that get to actually do the ratings.
Yeah, it's like up there. This was like Odyssey level stuff. But I got a problem. And this is what bothers me, folks. And I don't know. It could be the heat. We had a 113 degree heat index in Memphis yesterday. So it could very well be that I'm just in a bad mood because it's so hot and my air conditioning went out again. Maybe that's the issue. Or maybe I have a legitimate beef. And here it is. Why are we doing these hearings? Why are we doing any of this? Why are we wasting our taxpayer money? We have freaking potholes as big as Buicks in Memphis. Why aren't we spending our money on things that actually matter? Why in the world are we holding these hearings? Because we knew all of this back in 2025 because President Trump issued an executive order about all of this. The president alerted us to the wokeness of the Smithsonian. So look, I appreciate Congressman Tim Burchett. I really do. And I appreciate his heart is in the right place, and this man actually wants to do something. But the reality is the rest of Congress doesn't want to do diddly squat, and not necessarily in that order. Squat diddly. Okay, that sounds weird. Diddly squat. How many times have we been down this road, ladies and gentlemen? I mean, how many times? Again, when you look at what Congress is doing, and all they're doing is squandering our money because they want the sound bites, they want the clips, they know that we're going to play these things on the radio, we're going to talk about it on the radio, they know that people are going to talk about it on TV. But we've known all of this for years. My question is, I want to know what Congress is going to do to fix all of this. By the way, it's a Republican-controlled Congress. Now, I know that Congress, the Republicans, don't want to do big things like, I don't know, make sure that our elections are safe and secure. I know they don't want to do that kind of stuff. But it seems to me they should all be able to agree that our tax money is being squandered by the Smithsonian. We should all be disgusted. Every single thing that was said yesterday, we should all be disgusted by. We should be disgusted that they think Mickey Mouse, one of our most beloved cartoon characters, an Americana, a slice of Americana, is some sort of like evil white supremacist. We should definitely be outraged over the idea that being polite is a form of white supremacy. I guess, Dylan, this is why there are all the rampages and rioting at Popeyes.
It has to be.
Right? I mean, hello. Oh, what's even worse is, I mean, God forbid, I'm surprised the riots haven't happened at Chick-fil-A. Here's your order, ma'am. Okay, great. Thanks. My pleasure. What'd you say to me? What? My pleasure? How dare you? You racist! And the next thing you know, chicken nuggets are flying all over the place. We should all be outraged at that. It does explain a lot, though. And we should be enraged that children are being exposed to books showing pictures of men lusting after each other in the bookstore at the Smithsonian. What in the name of Millard Fillmore is going on down there? That's what I want to know. But here's the deal. Congress, they've got the power. They've got the power to fix it. Congress has all the power. You see, President Trump can't go in and completely defund the Smithsonian museums. No. That power rests solely and exclusively with the United States Congress, which, ladies and gentlemen, last time I checked, unless somebody else has kicked the bucket, is still controlled by the Republican Party, the grand old party. They control everything. So why haven't they defunded the Smithsonian? In all seriousness, why has that not happened? Are you ready for this? They get more than $1 billion, $1 billion of your tax money. That's how much these people get. Now, Congress could have taken action last year, right? If they were really serious about it. But they're not serious about it. And I think everybody knows that. But it's outrageous, ladies and gentlemen. We have a do-nothing Congress right now. And I say that because they have the power to do something. They would rather hold the hearings. We are still waiting for Russia to be prosecuted. Nothing's happened there. Not a single thing. And I don't think it is. I just don't think it is. So anyway, let's defund. Somebody make the motion. Let's defund the Smithsonian. Tell them if they want to do all this woke garbage, they can do it on their own dime. But the American taxpayers are not. We're not going to put up with it anymore. It's just outrageous. Unbelievable. Dylan, I got to have a doctor. I usually save my Dr. Pepper for a little bit later on in the show.
Not the midday Dr. Pepper. You need the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're literally. Wow.
Yeah. It's that bad of a
day. That was
day.
Very satisfying, I'll say.
It may be a four Dr. Pepper day. I'm just telling you. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm curious here. Are you okay with the Republicans just holding the hearings for the sake of holding hearings? Or do you actually want to see them do something about all of this? 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. I'm going to drink my Dr. Pepper now.
Every generation must decide whether it will recognize deceit before it becomes normal. This weekend, Salem News Channel's America 250 film series presents The Fall of Deceit, a sobering documentary on government overreach, faith under pressure, and the cost of abandoning truth. Watch Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Salem News Channel.
All right, let's get right to the phones here, 901-260-5926. Honestly, it angers me what the Democrats have done to our beautiful museums, turning all of our museums and our parks, everything into some sort of bastion of wokeness. It's disgusting. Let's go to Pasadena, Texas. Dan, listening to us on Patriot Talk 920. Dan, what's on your mind?
I think you've hit on a hot topic, and it's got me thinking, and one of the things I'm thinking is a comparison between George Dekai's book and Thomas Paine's book, Common Sense. And as you mentioned, the library is no longer, or at least currently not selling Thomas Paine's book, but it is George Dekai's. So I'm wondering how sales of Dekai's book are going with the library. Is it falling off the shelf? Are they having trouble keeping it in stock? And back when Thomas Paine's book was in the Smithsonian Library, and I'm sure it was at one point, what were the sales numbers for that book? So comparing those two books in terms of how well they sell, which is a reflection of the public interest in each book, I would think that Thomas Paine would come out on top with the American people. So why would the library choose to have a book in there that probably very few people are interested in buying, other than a political motive?
You know, it's a great point you're raising, Dan, because it is. They're shoving a political agenda down the throats of children and also moms and dads, trying to normalize a lot of behaviors out there. And it's just not right. If you want to do that at a bookstore, great, knock yourself out. But you do not use the taxpayers' money to do that kind of stuff. And again, what does this have to do with American history? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, little to nothing. Because, I mean, if she wanted to emphasize what happened to Japanese Americans in World War II when President Roosevelt ordered them to be in camps, I'm sure there are a lot of other books that probably make some sort of point much better than George Dekai's book.
Yeah.
You know, books written by historians or whatever. So,
all right. Dan, I got to skedaddle, my friend, but I think you got your point there. 901-260-5926. Maybe we ought to just shut down the Smithsonian altogether. Save us some tax money. 901-260-5926. We have some breaking news coming back. This is the Todd Stern Show.
For nearly 3,000 years, Homer's The Odyssey has shaped Western imagination. It tells the story of Odysseus as he faces monsters, shipwrecks, false comforts, and impossible choices on his long journey home. As one of the foundational works of Western literature, Homer's epic is more than mythology. It explores permanent questions about courage, duty, loyalty, family, leadership, temptation, and the search for home. In one of the epic's defining moments, Odysseus rejects the offer of immortality from the goddess Calypso, choosing instead the long and difficult journey home. His decision reveals one of the central themes of the Odyssey, that a life of duty, family, and home is greater than a life devoted to comfort or glory. Achilles chose glory. Odysseus chose home. That's why Hillsdale College has released its newest free online course, The Odyssey. Taught by Professor Benedict Whalen, the course reveals why Homer's masterpiece remains one of the greatest works of Western literature. Find this free course at hillsdale.edu/start now. The Odyssey from Hillsdale College. Go to hillsdale.edu/start now.
All right, some weird news coming out of Washington, D.C. This breaking news I was telling you about. There are two different stories here. One of them is good. The other is not good. We'll start with the not good first. Four Republican lawmakers joined Democrats to stop President Trump from removing transgender people from the military. Now, we've got the names of the lawmakers, all of the intel on ToddStearns.com. I'd encourage you to go to our website and read the story. The final vote, 212 to 217. So what they were going to do is they were going to insert an amendment into the National Defense Authorization Act, and it would have basically codified President Trump's executive orders. Remember something I said early on when President Trump was just about every single day signing just dozens and dozens of executive orders? Those are fantastic. But the problem is when the president leaves office, so do all those executive orders. They can immediately be undone by the new president. So that's why it's so vitally important for Congress to step in, the Republican-controlled Congress, to step in and follow through by codifying those executive orders. And that's what Republicans were trying to do with this ban on transgender people in the military. And you had four Republicans, Brian Fitzpatrick, out of Pennsylvania, Kimberly King-Hines out of the Northern Mariana Islands, Congressman Mike Lauder out of New York, and James Moylan out of Guam. And they were the four that sided with all the Democrats to preserve transgenderism in the military. You know, one of the things I wrote about, there's a chapter in the book, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. And those of you watching us, I've got a copy of it right here in my hands. And one of the things I do, I'm flipping over to the table of contents here. We have an entire chapter. I have an entire chapter in the book on how Trump saved the military, chapter 13. And it truly is amazing how the president was able to select Pete Hegseth as the war secretary. It was for such a time as this moment. And God bless the president for picking Hegseth. As a matter of fact, I want to read this to you. This is the first graph, and this ties directly in with what just happened. President Trump and Secretary of War Pete Hegseth promise, this is from chapter 13 in the Golden Age, How Trump Saved America, page 139. President Trump and Secretary of War Pete Hegseth promised on the campaign trail that they would declare war on woke generals who turned the greatest fighting force on the planet into a bunch of pronoun-confused social justice warriors. And I'm happy to announce they've delivered on that promise. The president announced during commencement exercises at West Point on May 24th, 2025, that he had officially banned drag shows, critical race theory, and transgenderism within the U.S. military. I'm not going to read any further. You'll have to buy the book to read what else I wrote. It's a great chapter in the book. But the point is that, yes, the president can do that, but it's only temporary, because if the Democrats win election in 2028, all of that goes away, which, again, that's why it's so vitally important for the congressional Republicans to get their butts in gear. Get off your blessed assurance and get to work. So anyway, we've got the names of the lawmakers. If you want to reach out to them, you can do that. ToddStearns.com is where that information is located. So there was something else that happened on Capitol Hill yesterday. And this happened in the Senate. And very rarely do I find myself somewhat agreeing with Democrats. But ladies and gentlemen, yesterday, Pete Hegseth came hat in hand and said that we need hundreds of millions of more dollars, really billions of dollars, to continue to fight the war in Iran. And the reporting is that things are not going as well as we thought because they're not telling us how much equipment's been destroyed and all of that, which is going to cost more money to replace. So what they're saying is that we need more money, but it's probably going to be more money than that. So Hegseth, I thought, did a great job. I'm going to get to the part where I agree with the Democrats on one thing, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. But I want to play this audio from Pete Hegseth confronting Senator Gary Peters. This guy's a radical Democrat. Cut number 20.
What's happening? We have political leadership. You don't have a strategy. You don't have a long-term plan to actually win this war. Win the war. The men and women are going to be able to do it, but they need to have leadership. When will you show leadership?
We have leadership.
When will you show leadership?
Why don't you show some leadership and stand up to your fellow Democrats who won't fund the troops, who stand and play partisan politics while you don't give us the money? You want to stand up here and talk about the troops? You won't show any political courage to actually fund our department because you have Trump derangement syndrome and can't actually commit to anything meaningful. So I put this on you, Senator.
Secretary Hegseth, you have trillions, you have over $1 trillion. You're asking for $1.5 trillion. It's not a question of money. It's a question of leadership and understanding what it takes to actually win.
Political cowardice of Democrats who won't fund the troops.
Wow. Good for you, Hegseth. No, and he's right. These Democrats are not. I mean, look, we're in a war. We got to make sure that our fighting men and women have every single resource they need, right? They can not want for anything. They need the best of the best. And that goes all the way down to the food they eat to whatever equipment they need. We should provide that for them. Yes, there's a but coming, but there is a broader question here. What are we doing over there? In all seriousness, what are we doing over there? Because I heard the testimony, and I didn't hear that question answered. I genuinely am very curious, what are we doing over there? What is the end game, and what does victory look like for us? And it concerns me that we are slow walking ourselves into what could be one of these forever wars. And the president put out a statement yesterday saying, well, look, this has only been 4 months. That's true, but they told us it was only supposed to be 6 weeks. Gas prices are going back up again, and I know there are the diehard MAGA folks, and I'd like to think of myself as a diehard MAGA person, but I don't like paying higher price for gas. But I'm being told by the diehards that I have a patriotic duty to suck it up and celebrate the fact that I'm paying more for gasoline. I find that to be, what is he calling it? That's absurd. That's nuts. I don't want to pay more for gas, and you don't either, and you know it. So anyway, the Democrats really went after Hegseth, and here's the thing. The Democrats are not wrong in the questions they were asking. Cut 23. This is Senator John Ossoff from Georgia.
3 weeks later, you declared victory. That was now nearly 4 months ago. 3 weeks after you'd already said Iran's military was destroyed and combat ineffective, you said, quote, Operation Epic Fury was a historic and overwhelming victory. You said Iran's military had been rendered, quote, combat ineffective for years to come. And you stated we had, quote, achieved every single objective. Were those accurate statements?
It certainly was, on behalf of the men and women in uniform, a historic military victory over Iran.
Had Iran's military been rendered, quote, combat ineffective for years to come? That was a statement that you made 4 months ago.
They had 160 naval vessels in the Blue Water Navy, and they're gone. Their Air Force is completely combat ineffective, and they don't have a defense industrial base.
So
describe to me a country that doesn't have an Air Force, a Navy, or a defense industrial base, and I will describe to you a country that does not have an effective military. It can lob missiles.
Mr. Secretary, you stated 4 months ago that Iran's military had been rendered, quote, combat ineffective for years to come. Has Iran's military been, for the last 4 months, combat ineffective?
It's been set back not just years, but likely decades.
But that's not what they said. And they also said that we had destroyed. And again, this is, look, you can support the administration here, but when the administration comes out and says this has been destroyed, then you better make sure that this has been destroyed. We were under the impression this war had already been won. Now, here is Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, Cut 22.
Unpopular and unauthorized war abroad is a higher priority to this administration than their ability to feed their families and provide health care to their loved ones who are sick.
Well, Senator, you're talking about political trade-offs, and our job is to deliver for the United States military and the President of the United States. And we look at the cost of a nuclear Iran, and we want to prevent that for future generations. And that requires funding and supplementals and this budget and next-generation capabilities. And that's why we're here today, to request some of that, to ensure we can ensure that Iran never gets a nuclear
weapon. So you're essentially saying, you're asking for literally $1.5 trillion for a war that President Trump said he already won. You're asking for $1.5 trillion, unlimited money for bombs, but insufficient money in the American, for the American people, for their health care, their food, their housing, and our farmers, Secretary Rawlins, who we have cut SNAP program.
Look, Gillibrand is crazy lady, but she brings up a good point. I mean, we're talking about, this is not just a drop in the bucket. We're talking about $1.5 trillion in defense spending. And look, every single penny of this may be legitimate. But my question is, when do we get out of all of this? As a matter of fact, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, yesterday said, we got to find a way to end this. So Johnson, and the reason why the Speaker of the House said that is he knows what his caucus, what the caucus are hearing out in the hinterlands, that you, the great conservatives of America, are ready to get this thing wrapped up. And that's just not going to happen anytime soon. Hate to break it to you, but it's just not going to happen. Let's go to the phones here. Anthony in Alabama. All right, Anthony, what say you?
Well, listening to this bantering going back and forth between Hegseth and Congress, Hegseth sounds like he's doing a little bit of tap dancing. And I'm not in total disagreement with the Democrats on this. And that my idea is that money belongs to us, taxpayer money. Now, what is the end game here? It doesn't look to me like you're going to win a war if you're going to do a tit for tat. So it sounds to me like it's turning into a bottomless pit for money. I would say, if I was Congress, you let us know what your strategy is here, like George Bush used to say. And we will fund you, help to get this wrapped up. But it doesn't look like they're doing anything. They're just going back and forth. How long is this going to last? You know, I never heard a fight in a war tit for tat like this. So I'm all in favor of, hey, man, when you show us what you're going to do, then we'll let that money go free. But
Anthony, hold on. No, look, I don't get it. I have never seen a war like this where, all right, you shoot a missile at us and you kill our troops. We're going to shoot back, and then we're going to stop and wait. What are we waiting for? They're just going to – I mean, the argument now is that all of these ceasefires have given Iran the opportunity to basically reload. So are we just giving Iran another opportunity to reload here? I just don't – to your point, I don't understand the strategery.
Yeah, the strategery, exactly. And you're right on there, Mr. Starnes, and I made my point here. I hope I made my point, and you can move on to any other callers.
Anthony, thank you for calling in. I appreciate that. Yeah, Folks, we've got to get out of this. This is going to get, I'm telling, look, here's where we're going. And by the way, the president at Dover today, the remains of the service members coming back to America, and the president will be the comforter-in-chief to those families today. And it's a job that he does very well, and it's something that he takes very personally, this president. But the more, my concern is this, we are going to see more American fatalities, and we're going to get closer to Election Day, and this is going to be the one issue that mobilizes the Democrats and demoralizes the Republicans. Because keep in mind, most young Gen Z Republicans, conservatives, who are very active politically now, they are completely turned off by this war. So all that to say, and I think that's a good line, tap dancing, because that's what Hegseth was doing. And I think we deserve honest answers here. And those were pretty legitimate questions. You said everything had been destroyed. You said we had won. Why do we need more money, and why are we still at war with Iran? All right, 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Now, I need you folks on the honor system here. So here's what we're going to do. Between now and August the 11th, when my book comes out, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America, if you pre-order a copy of the book, we're going to give you an unpublished chapter of the book that will not be in the actual book that you'll see in the bookstore. So you're getting a bonus chapter if you pre-order. Here's how you do it. As soon as you pre-order, pick up your phone and call our beautiful call screener, Helen, the lovely Miss Helen, and she will get your information, and we will send you that unpublished chapter. Now, our telephone number, 901-260-5926, that's 901-260-5926, and we will send you the unpublished chapter of The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. The book is getting some great reviews. Here's what Congressman Marlon Stutzman had to say: a celebration of the restoration of our nation, but it's also a challenge for the next generation to embrace the mission. Our good friend, Congressman Ron Estes, says Todd captures the essence of the Trump Golden Age and reveals why President Trump is the patriot our country needs for such a time as this. Every American-loving citizen should read about this national restoration as we celebrate our 250th anniversary. Well, thank you for that, Congressman. So, again, you can pre-order wherever you buy your books, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million, and then you call us, and we'll send you the unpublished chapter, 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
You're great at protecting your data, but lots of places could still expose you to identity theft.
I thought it was safe.
If that happens, LifeLock gives you a U.S.-based restoration agent who will stick by your side from start to finish. Phone calls, filing documentation, preparing insurance claims, your agent handles it all. In fact, we're so confident, restoration is guaranteed, or your money back. Isn't it nice to have someone like that on your side? Save up to 30% with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
All right, Zoran Mamdani has once again, he has balked on a campaign promise, walking back his threat to arrest Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister. Just a few days ago, Mamdani was saying that he's a war criminal and that he would be arrested if he stepped foot on American soil to attend any meetings at the United Nations. Well, it turns out that he has no authority to do that. And it was so bad that he was forced, somebody forced him to go out. It had to have been Trump. Forced him to go out to the cameras and actually acknowledge that he has absolutely no right whatsoever to arrest Benjamin Netanyahu. I would have loved to have seen Mamdani try that, but the funnier thing is, God forbid, Israel ever lets that guy into the country. What if they arrested Mamdani? Would we try to get him out of an Israeli jail? I don't know about that. All right, 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. During the break, head over to ToddStearns.com. You've got to read my op-ed. Does the Smithsonian think Mickey Mouse is racist? Also, House Republicans abandon Trump, reject ban on trans people in military. Be sure to read that. And coming up, we're going to be talking about another big story on our website. Thousands of non-citizens discovered on New Jersey's voting rolls. How about that, ladies and gentlemen? All right, hang tight. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft.
Oh, no.
That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Save up to 30% with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's right. I love this American ride.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to hour two of the big show. Great to have you with us today. By the way, this segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at Newsmax. Millions of Americans have already made the switch to Newsmax, including President Trump. They're watching incredible shows like Greta, Carl Higbee, Rob Schmidt, and Rob Finnerty. So if you're tired of big media, start watching Newsmax. It's free to start. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com for immediate access. That's NewsmaxPlus.com. You're going to get all of President Trump's most important events live, including at this very moment as the president in Dover honoring the fallen soldiers returning home. Imagine watching all sorts of incredible events on Newsmax. Once you start Newsmax Plus, you're not going to stop. Get it for free. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com. Well, we have a disturbing story up on our website about some information coming out of New Jersey, where finally the Democrat governor acknowledging that thousands and probably tens of thousands of non-citizens were found to be on voter rolls. And again, they told us this was not possible. So how in the world is this possible now? I want to bring into the conversation our good friend Steve Gill, publisher of TriStarDaily.com, a terrific political website. Steve, good to have you back with us.
Hey, Todd, good to be here. And the really disturbing part of that story to me is not just the thousands, tens of thousands of illegal aliens registered. It's the fact that apparently at least 600 or more voted. And like you said, we've been told by the Democrats forever, oh, yeah, they never vote. Well, you know, they're voting and in close races. That's the difference. And that's what Democrats are hoping, praying for, and intending.
Steve, you have to go back now and wonder, all right, were there a lot of close races in New Jersey over the past several election cycles? And if so, if that is in fact the case, were those people's votes counted? And do we have some folks who maybe lost elections that should have actually won those elections? And I bet you dollars to donuts, every single one of them is a Republican.
This is the tip of the iceberg, and we've seen with President Trump's speech last week, which the mainstream media chose not to cover, where he not only pointed out the stolen election in 2020, but brought the receipts. I mean, literally the documentation that you had those in our intelligence agencies, those in the operation of these candidacies who were intending to create this kind of false winner, false election result. And then we've seen, you know, in Arizona yesterday, where he had huge turnout.
Well, we'll get to that. Yeah, we'll get to Arizona in just a minute. But
we know it was stolen, too. How many of these that we had stolen all over the country? New Jersey's just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, and again, this goes back to why it is so vitally important for the Senate to pass the Save America Act. I think it's safe to say that's just not going to happen. Establishment Republicans are entrenched, and they are simply just not going to do anything about this, Steve.
Well, and again, we're now adding others that seem to be in that same pattern. Again, the ones that got beat in their primaries because they weren't honest, they weren't truthful, they didn't represent what they claimed they were when they ran for office. Now that they've gotten beat, you know, it's like whether it's Cornyn, whether it's Tillis on his way out in North Carolina, now they're really literally thumbing their nose, or maybe it's that middle finger, not just to President Trump, but to American voters, to taxpayers, who they're sticking it to on their way out.
Steve, I do want to switch gears to what happened yesterday in Arizona. I mean, these results were just staggering. Congressman Andy Biggs is going to be joining us next week on the show. The last numbers I saw, he had over 71% of the vote. Every single candidate, Republican candidate, endorsed by Donald Trump, won in huge numbers, including Jay Feely, the former NFL star. He won his race in the 1st Congressional District, and also Mark Lamb in Arizona's 5th Congressional District. This was a huge night for Republicans in Arizona. But what do you make of that Trump endorsement?
Well, first of all, it just reminds us, as I noted earlier, that Arizona was stolen. I mean, Carrie Lake should have been governor. Abe Hamada, who won his Republican primary with President Trump's endorsement, should have been the attorney general. A lot of the corruption in Arizona would have been ended if they had not stolen that series of elections and votes in that state. You know, what it says again is, you know, the gold standard in Republican primaries is Trump's endorsement. You know, he's lost maybe a few around the country, but not very many. The question is, can that translate into the general election? And we're, you know, still going to have to wait and see. But I think that clearly the momentum, I haven't broken down the numbers in Arizona specifically of what kind of turnout we had, because typically when Trump's not on the ballot, turnout is less. A lot of the MAGA supporters, a lot of the Trump supporters don't turn out when he's not on the ballot, which gives me some pause for concern as we roll into the midterms and whether or not his key voters, his base, will turn out in these midterms.
That is a fair point. Now, one of the things the president's trying to do to remedy that is hold some sort of a midterm RNC-style convention. That's going to be in Dallas in September. And I'm wondering if that is going to have the impact that the White House hopes it has by mobilizing Republicans across the nation.
I think that's a great start, and maybe, again, get people to gather, you know, get that enthusiasm ginned up. I think that for Republicans to, you know, maintain and perhaps even grow our Senate majority, keep and maintain and grow the House majority, I think he's going to have to go on the barnstorming routine again, like he did in the presidential races, where literally when he got elected in 2016, he was doing two or three rallies a day all over the country. I think they're going to have to do that to turn out his base, to really kind of mobilize the Trump enthusiasm. And I hope that's on their game plan.
I'm curious if you've been paying attention to what's happening in South Carolina. I kind of got in a little trouble with the party because I pointed out that who knew that hereditary peerage was a thing in the U.S. Congress. You know, my only question, this is, it could have gotten worse. I was going to ask this question on X, but I wanted to save it for you. My only question about Darlene Graham, is she in fact a Republican? I never knew.
Well, and she's legally changing her name to Graham now and dumping her married name to, again, try to really make that tie to Graham. Did you ever see the movie Distinguished Gentleman, where you had Eddie Murphy as a black guy running for a dead white Jewish congressman seat, used the name to fool voters into voting for him? I'm not sure she's completely fooling people. What she's fooling us is, what's her record? And you know, we're being told that she's going to be this conservative. She'll be a solid Trump vote. I don't want some more deja vu of this. Sounds strangely like Amy Coney Barrett to me, Todd.
It's a great observation and a frightening observation. Meanwhile, in Tennessee, the National Republican Congressional Committee naming the 9th congressional district race as one of their big races. And certainly the Democrats are bringing in their big guns, AOC. You've got Ayanna Pressley, Summer Lee campaigning in the Memphis area last weekend. And then you've got what has been called one of the nastiest congressional campaign primaries among Republicans. Brent Taylor, the state senator, he got President Trump's endorsement in the race, but there is some really ugly mud being thrown around.
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting in the 9th District, you saw, you know, Presley and AOC and others gathering in Memphis to support Justin Pearson, one of the Tennessee Three, one of the, you know, radical of radicals, who has, you know, one of those alternating dialects. When he went to Bowdoin College in Maine, he talked like a white guy. And when he's in Memphis, he talks like he's straight out of Malcolm X University. So they bring him to Memphis. You're not going to see them in Laverne and Smyrna and Waynesboro and Fayetteville. They're not going to bring them there. And I would suggest that whether it's Todd Warner or Brent Taylor, offer to fly them in to campaign in those rural, red, conservative parts of the 9th District that is now about a plus 10 Republican district. It is prime for Republicans to pick that seat up that's been held by liberal white Democrat Steve Cohen in a drawn for black voters district in Memphis for a long time. But Republicans have a great chance to pick that up. And whoever wins the primary probably wins the general, which is why you're seeing the fist fly in this primary battle.
Well, and then on the gubernatorial side, Senator Marsha Blackburn and going up against John Rose and a state representative named Monty Fritz. I think it's safe to say that Fritz has massive support among grassroots conservatives. He had the largest campaign turnout thus far. I think over 500 people turning out this week for a rally. I'm wondering, is Senator Blackburn in danger here? What's going on in Tennessee?
I don't think she's in any danger from Monty Fritz. I mean, he has a very loud, very vocal, but very small group of advocates. He doesn't have the resources, the money. When you're seeing Marsha, who I think one of the out-of-state, you know, dark money groups has already dumped over $7 or $8 million on her behalf. And I got to tell you, Todd, I'm really sick of all this out-of-state PAC money dumping in. They're playing in state house races here in Tennessee, $200,000 and $300,000 being dumped in. They don't drive on our roads. Their kids don't go to our schools. They don't live here. They don't buy gasoline here. But they're trying to impact our lifestyle here with who they're playing for and very heavily running attack ads in state house races. And then, you know, with Marsha dumping over $7 to $8 million into her gubernatorial campaign. So Monty won't win. Rose is closing the gap. She's had a really bad last 3 weeks with misstep after misstep and some really bad ads that she's put out. But I'm not sure that Rose can beat her when Monty Fritz is pulling off just enough votes to probably elect Marsha Blackburn to the governor's office.
Steve, real quick, you know, one of the big concerns, and this is something we've heard in a lot of other races around the country, Republicans refusing to debate. And I get it from a campaign strategy, but really, I think it just is a great disservice to the voters if you do not sit down and debate the big issues of the day with your opponents.
I agree with you 100%. And I get the strategy. If you feel like you've got a lead, now keep in mind, Marsha Blackburn's political strategist, Ward Baker, was running around throwing out a 50-point lead poll early on. That inevitability, that you can't lose claim has dropped precipitously. The latest poll that they're touting has her below 50%. So it's not the I have no way of losing, you know, argument from tactics again. It is a closing race. And I think from that standpoint, they're afraid to debate because they don't need any more missteps. But I agree with you. I don't care if you have a big lead. Tactically, I get it. But in terms of public policy, if you can't stand up, defend what you're for, how you're for it, and give us a glimpse into how you're going to govern, you don't believe it. You don't belong in a House, a Senate, or a governor's office, in my view.
You know, again, looking at and just some of the optics of all of this, you know, not wanting to sit down, talk to reporters that, you know, might be more aggressive. Of course, the media has been unkind to her. I know Channel 5 in Nashville, especially, they have been egregiously awful. But the reality is that, you know, people deserve to hear from, you know, the folks that want to be the next governor of the state of Tennessee.
I don't really believe Channel 5 has been awful to her. I think they've exposed what she's done, and it's awful because of, you know, her dodging debates. And when you lie to the media, Todd, as you and I have been involved in a long time, you lie to them, they're going to clamp on your leg like a dog with a bone. And she has misrepresented the truth to them, saying that she couldn't give comments because she was on federal time. That was not true. She couldn't give comments or get involved in these forums, claiming she had been involved in multiple forums. That wasn't true. So when you start misrepresenting the truth, yeah, the media is going to come after you, but they're coming after her with truth and what she's done. They're not having to make things up to smear her.
All right, Steve, we're going to have to leave it there. What's the big headline? We've got about 30 seconds. The big headline on TriStarDaily.com.
I think that we're going to be breaking a story today. In schools across the state of Tennessee, we're seeing school lunch prices explode, you know, to the point that in some counties, kids are going to be paying $7 for school lunch. They still get mystery meat, but they're paying a lot more. And if you got three kids in school, can you really afford $21 a day to feed them a school lunch?
$7 for a school lunch?
And again, maybe that mystery meat. Now, if it's pizza day, I'm good with it.
Unbelievable. All right. Steve Gill, everybody, on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Go check out his story, Steve, breaking that news coming up a little bit later on today. All right, we've got to take a quick break here, folks. 901-260-5926. What do you think about the point I'm trying to make here, folks, that every candidate must debate? If you want to be elected, if you want to serve the people, you need to be willing to stand there across the aisle from your opponent and debate the big issues of the day. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. An amazing story that has nothing to do with politics, but I just love the story from CBS News. A guy goes into a thrift store and comes out with just something incredible. Cut 25.
Maybe the greatest thrift store find of all time. Quinn Brown, 19 years old, has resold thousands of items online over the years, most for less than $20. But earlier this year, going through the bins at a Goodwill near Portland, Oregon, he noticed this. Somehow or another, NBA great Wilt Chamberlain's Lakers warm-up jacket from the 72 NBA Finals had ended up for sale in Oregon for $3.07. Here's Brown.
The really key moment for me was I was in my room and I looked at the measurements of the jacket. Wilt Chamberlain being 7'1", the jacket measured 33 inches long, so would have gone down almost to my knees. I looked at it and it matched up.
Smart kid, when Brown posted his discovery online, Sotheby's reached out, helped with the forensic investigation, matching the stitches on the jacket to old pictures of it, and then put it up for auction. And that $3 thrift store find just sold for nearly $90,000, putting the jacket into the pantheon of bargain finds, including a Declaration of Independence copy found at a flea market, and this 1,000-year-old Chinese bowl sold at a garage sale, both worth millions, by the way. As for Brown, he says he plans to put most of his windfall into savings, but also celebrate by taking what he calls a cheap vacation to Vietnam. Let us know how the thrift stores are.
Wow. Dylan, could you imagine?
I need to shop where this guy shops.
I'm just trying to figure out, how did the guy even know? I mean, you know, there's a lot of junk in a thrift store.
And there's a lot of fake stuff too that looks like the thing, but it's actually just like a knockoff someone just made. I don't know. All I can find is like stained shirts that smell kind of funny when I go thrifting. So like to find this, it's a hidden gem.
But it could be one of those stained shirts could be like, you know, I don't know, President Trump, you know, was eating a filet of fish and, you know, dropped a little sauce on
That's
the shirt. You know, they could, you never know.
Never stop thrifting.
Be able to buy a house.
There you go.
But yeah, that's pretty awesome. What a great story though. And the kids going to Vietnam. Is that like a thing now?
Wouldn't be my first choice, but you know, have at it.
Yeah, that's exactly.
You have $90,000 now.
Go to Tehran, Vietnam. Okay, whatever. No, but apparently Vietnam is a major hotspot among Gen Z international travelers. I don't know how you guys, your generation goes. They're like all over the world.
Yeah, the money that they have to spend, I don't understand.
I don't get that at all. I'd much rather go down to the Redneck Riviera, enjoy the beautiful beaches of the Gulf of America. All right, 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. I was on Liz Peek's website, lizpeek.com. I am stunned by the story that her staff wrote. Are you ready for this? In New York City, a government plumber, a city plumber, was pulling down nearly $500,000 in a single year. This is absurd. The numbers come from Manhattan Institute, but in a one-year period, one plumbing supervisor earned $465,000. Two-thirds of that came from overtime alone. Liz Peek joins us on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Liz, I don't know how your team comes up with these stories. This is absolutely insanity.
Yeah, but, you know, it is just sort of another indication of so much sort of soft corruption in New York City, so much talk about, well, this had to do with NYCHA, the New York City Housing Authority. And I'm sure you've read that in this whole debate about rent control and going after landlords with subpar rental units and so forth, Mayor Mamdani has yet to address the fact that by far the worst landlords in New York City, the most wasteful, the most indifferent to the plight of their tenants is, of course, New York City. And he won't address that because there are literally hundreds and hundreds of complaints from NYCHA tenants complaining about rat infestations, appliances that don't work, heat that's not available during the winter. I mean, it's really preposterous. But this story was at Town Hall, and it really is kind of an amazing thing that this plumbing supervisor is getting paid basically by taxpayers almost $500,000 a year. And by the way, I'm sure that he's not alone. The way he earned that was basically through overtime. And I'm sure you've read stories about how various kinds of civil servants in New York City get paid a fortune in overtime, and it's all calculated. It's all completely orchestrated by the agencies. Again, it's soft corruption. It's everywhere. I mean, it really sort of also kind of reminds us all that one of the best things to be these days is a plumber. AI isn't going to take your job. They really need to. Etc. But it's very dispiriting, isn't it?
It really is. Also, speaking of dispiriting, I have to imagine the Democratic Socialists are really dispirited because, once again, Zohran Mamdani has failed to deliver on a campaign promise. Turns out he's not allowed to arrest Benjamin Netanyahu after all.
Yeah, and you know, you knew that. I knew that.
Of course.
Zohran Mamdani knew that as well. You can't have city officials overriding federal law. He is protected as a head of state under federal law. And so it was all just performance art and being disingenuous with his voters. By the way, the International Criminal Court, which we all know America is not a signatory to, not a party to, the fact that they have this arrest warrant out on Netanyahu has nothing to do with anything to do with law enforcement in the United States. But the warrant is interesting because what it cites is that Netanyahu was party to withholding aid from people in the Palestinian territory, Palestinians in Gaza, right? So actually, who has been blocking, and not only blocking, but stealing aid, according to the UN, from the Palestinians in Gaza? It's Hamas. And now that is actually a fact. I mean, it's been long reported that these trucks go in and Hamas basically commandeers them, and then they sell aid that's being delivered by the United States or by Israel at black market rates, and they pocket the money. That's where their money comes from, in part. So, you know, where's Mamdani on holding those people accountable? It is so off-center, Todd, as you well know. It is so wrong-headed to be blaming Israel. Remember, all of the blaming Israel started after the attack by Hamas, which slaughtered men, women, and children in Israel, and then Israel fought back. That was their big sin. It's pretty incredible to me that basically you've got an incredible element now, wing of the Democratic Party, that has gone full anti-Israel and full anti-Semitic. and without any apologies at all. It's incredible.
Liz Peek joining us on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line today. Liz, I know the big story for you guys, your comments on this oil threat in the Red Sea coming from the Houthis, and we could see a spike in gas prices. You know, it's interesting. The Democrats in Tennessee, or where I live, already sent out a big press release yesterday noting that gas prices were climbing again. The hearings, and I'm a big Trump guy, but I am really concerned about what we're doing in Iran right now and how long this is going to last. I don't think we got any clear indication of that from Pete Hegseth yesterday on Capitol Hill. How big of a threat is this Red Sea situation?
Well, it's serious. I mean, the Saudis have basically circumvented having to export through the Strait of Hormuz by exporting on a different pipeline and then a different strait, which now is being threatened by the Houthis. And we're talking about 5 to 7 million barrels a day of oil. It's a lot. And it's about 3% of world production. So this is, a real problem. Look, it is inconceivable to me that with Iran going after all the Gulf states, bombing Kuwait and Saudi Arabia and the Houthis attacking, which is an Iran surrogate, Saudi Arabia and so forth, that these nations cannot all muster their forces and blow the Iranians out of the Strait of Hormuz. It just seems incredible to me. Why don't the combined navies of all these and our allies as well, who, by the way, Europe is worse off, they suffer more from high oil prices and high gas prices than Americans do. Why don't we just all of us collectively start protecting the ships that are traversing the Strait of Hormuz and also these other straits that lead into the Gulf of Aden? Why is there not a more robust protection? Let's face it, every country in the world is being disadvantaged by Iran. Surely we can manage to blow out of the water the speedboats and blow out of the hills the missile sites that are allowing them to do this. This is preposterous to me that they are literally controlling the economy of the world right now. It cannot be allowed to happen. And look, this is an impossible choice for Donald Trump, it seems to me. Either he agrees to what Qatar and Pakistan are coming up with, another 10-day reprieve, which allows Iran to rebuild their inventories of missiles and also recapture a lot of revenues. Does he allow that because oil prices will come down and gas prices will come down, or does he just move forward with the war? I don't know. I mean, it's a horrible choice, and I think it's fair to be critical of Trump and his advisors and Pete Hegseth for not having anticipated this problem better. But here we are. That doesn't really help solve it.
Liz,
I don't know what they're going to do.
Before I let you go, I'd love for you to weigh in on your column over at Fox, and you make an interesting observation about the economy. And I don't know. It's the economy is actually doing better than the media wants to admit. That's the headline of the piece. But a CNBC survey shows what 61% of the public remains pessimistic about the economy. What's the messaging here that the Republicans need to be taking out on the campaign trail?
Well, I think they need to, first of all, come out from their defensive crouch and start talking about the tax cut bill that President Trump engineered last year. Because guess what? Every family in America has benefited from that. Had they allowed the tax cut bill from 2017 to expire, every family would have been paying thousands more in taxes this year. And by the way, that's what Kamala Harris was promising. So it is also the fact that he lowered taxes on tips and lowered taxes on overtime, all these things. That's a pretty damn big plus to the economy, not to mention that we have an investment boom partly because of the pro-business expensing of capital equipment and so forth that was in that bill. So you have investment going through the roof. Employment partly is very strong because of that investment boom. And what will follow is enormous gains in productivity from AI and from all this investment. So there is a good story to tell. I think, honestly, Republicans have been so browbeaten over the tax cuts as being And Democrats call them a handout to the wealthy, and they accuse Republicans of only caring about the wealthy. No taxes on tips? Is that for wealthy people? No, that's for working class people. And Todd, as the DSA can't even explain to you what a working class person is, and they sure as heck aren't working class people, I think Republicans need to get more aggressive on saying, yeah, Donald Trump took a lot of these working class voters in 2016, again in 2024. And guess what? We are doing stuff for that group. You are not. And be positive about what's been accomplished, because other than the war in Iran, which I get is quite controversial right now, the reality is there's a lot that has gone right. And Republicans need to go out and talk about it.
It's a great point. A great point. LizPeek.com, everybody. Go check out her website. Liz, we got to leave it there. But great intel, great insight all the way around.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. Liz Peek, everybody. You can see her on Fox News all the time. You can read her column there, but go to Fox or go to LizPeek.com and read all of her great commentary. We've got to take a break here, folks. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Got to tell you about our good friends over at Chapter. Now, Chapter is one of our newest sponsors here on the Todd Stearns Radio Show. And a lot of folks, if you're 65, if you're turning 65, or maybe you're already on Medicare, a lot of folks could be overpaying right now. I mean, that's just the way it goes. And a lot of you may not even know that you are overpaying. And that's why I'm partnering with Chapter. Their advisors are very honest. They are not paid to push any one plan. They're the only Medicare advisor that compares every plan nationwide to tell you where you stand. And in one call, you're going to know exactly where you stand. I want you to go check them out. AskChapter.org/realhelp. That's AskChapter.org/realhelp. If you're turning 65 or you're already on Medicare, go to AskChapter.org/realhelp. All right. Someone sent me this last night. This is terrible. This actually happened at LaGuardia Airport in New York City. You're going to be hearing traffic audio from the air traffic control tower to pilots. And Dylan, I want you to listen along. I just want you to listen to this. And let me explain what you're about to hear. You're going to hear the tower explain to the pilots that somebody may be targeting planes with a missile launcher, a rocket launcher. Cut number 26, please.
All right, Delta 2604, LaGuardia Tower, wind 210 at 10, runway 22, clear to land. Man pad alert issued at LaGuardia Airport at 0027. Use extreme caution.
All right, clear to land, runway 22, Delta 2604. Hey, could you explain what a man pad is?
Yeah, that's a manned portable air defense system. Yeah, it's basically it was a report of a rocket launcher.
Okay, where was that?
There was a report by the Port Authority Police. They said by, I believe, Terminal C. We had conflicting reports, but nothing has been an issue as of yet.
Okay, Delta 2604, thanks for the information.
You're welcome. No need to respond, Delta 2064. Port Authority Police reported it was non-credible threat.
Delta 2604, thanks.
All right, so if you missed that, MANPAD stands for Man Portable Air Defense System. And imagine, everybody was so nonchalant about it. Hey, guys, heads up. Somebody may be launching a rocket at your Delta flight.
I want to know why they call it a MANPAD. I feel like you need a new acronym then.
You know who got excited about that? Tim Walz.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, boys. Did someone say man pad?
It was just him. They just reported him there.
You know, it is what it is. So anyway, apparently this is a big problem overseas, but this apparently it may be a problem at Terminal C at LaGuardia Airport in New York City. But I mean, could you imagine, you know, being the pilot and getting on the intercom system, folks? Better buckle up. It's about to get real up in here.
That would be very terrifying.
Yes, it would. But, you know, again, it goes back to the whole idea of the threat is now moving outside of the airport itself. You know, everybody's so concerned about, you know, patting down Granny and getting to first base, you know, with Grandpa. Meanwhile, you've got people that are flying drones into airplanes. You've got this, what it turned out to be, a false report of somebody with a rocket launcher. You know, I do wonder if you're in New York City, I don't think you would pay much attention if somebody was walking down the street carrying one of those things.
See, I would think the opposite. I would think out of all the things, I would be very concerned if a rocket launcher was being like held walking.
Yeah, maybe.
It's just not seen a small item.
I've just seen a lot of weird stuff.
True. You
know, in New York City.
I just maybe a gun I'll be okay with. Like, but that is very, very obvious.
There was a guy on a subway car, and I think I shared this story many, many years ago, but there was a guy on a subway car. It was the F train. I don't know why I remember this. It was the F train. And it was late one night. I had to work the late shift at Fox, and so I'm taking the subway home. And there's some guy sitting there. He's got a live chicken, and he's making out with the chicken. He's kissing the chicken on the beak.
I did not expect to hear that he was making out with it.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say he saved a seat for it.
No. He was caressing the chicken.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a little awkward for all of us.
Was it a girl chicken?
Hard to say.
Okay. All right.
We don't.
You didn't want to get that close to find out.
Yeah. Pardon me. Is that a rooster or a hen? All I knew was I guess the guy was into chicks. I don't know. For whatever. And then there were the pan flute guys. Those guys really creep me out because they're all like little people. They're not little people. They're almost little people, but they're just really, really short. Mm-hmm. And then they get on and they just play the pan flute. And you wonder, would you rather be stuck in a subway car with a guy making out with a chicken being serenaded by some little midget fella playing the pan flute? Or would you rather have a mariachi band? It's kind of like you got to weigh the odd. You know, it's like, okay, the comfort level.
I think I would just get off and walk at that point.
You would not want to do that in that neighborhood, but yes, that could actually be an option.
Well, there you go.
It took me 7 months before I could, you know, eat at Chick-fil-A again after all of that. I'm sure. It was tough.
I'm sad I didn't see anything when I went to New York. I didn't see any pan flutes or chicks.
I was traumatized.
I can see that.
It was very scary. All right, we've got to take a break here. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I don't mean to be unusually weird, but we needed to clear up something from the last segment. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. So happy to have you with us today. So we were talking in the last segment, Dylan, about my adventures on the subway train with the guy who was making out with a live chicken. And you asked whether or not the chicken was, you were just trying to figure out what side of the chicken coop the guy.
I mean, if he's making out with a chicken, those are questions that I have.
Yes. Yeah, so Kristen New, who is one of the, we affectionately call her one of the Real Housewives of Germantown. Dear friend of the station, she says, tell Dylan, all chickens are girls. If it's a boy, it's a rooster.
Yeah, I know that, but I use it interchangeably. But okay. I know that a rooster has its specific roles, and the chicken lays the eggs. I know that.
All right. Well, as long as you understand, I mean,
but you know, chicken can be, you know what I'm saying? If he's making out with the chicken, you're not going to say, oh, that's just a roost. That was a rooster.
Well, I think the rooster would fight back because the rooster would know. All right, dude. Yeah, we're not going. Yeah.
I'm not waking you up tomorrow morning. Sir.
Wow. Cock-a-doodle-doo. There you go. Okay. Welcome, everybody. So glad we got that cleared up. Thank you, Kristen New, for the lecture on the, I guess, the anatomy and biology of the poultry family. Well, there's really no good way to do this, but I want to go right away to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line and say hello to our good friend, Troy Miller, the CEO and president of the National Religious Broadcasters. Troy, welcome to the show. What, just rip that Band-Aid off.
Hey, Todd, good to be with you.
Troy, we're not going to talk chickens. We're going to spare you from that, but there is a lot going on in the world of religious liberty and, of course, faith and media as well. And, of course, we're still in the throes of this effort to save AM radio. And how is that effort going?
Yeah, we are, and we did get a good shout out about a week ago from the president asking the speaker and the majority leader to get this up on the floor. So we're hoping that they'll take this up before they go into the August recess.
Well, it's a big deal, and it is certainly something that we all need to be paying attention to, especially all of us who own AM radio stations, but also for listeners. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize the impact that AM radio has in the Christian world, and especially the not just the Christian teaching and preaching, but also the Christian talk stations that are out there.
That's right. Talk and teach is one of the most popular top genres on AM radio. And there are 85 million AM radio listeners across this country and depend on AM radio daily for their news, their information, and for, as you said, their Christian teaching. And Todd, we all know that this is also a bigger picture issue because right behind AM radio is FM radio. And really at the core of this is consumer choice. Will the consumer have the choice, the person in the car, of what they want to listen to, or are the big automakers going to make that choice for them?
And that is something that, you know, every single American needs to be engaged in. So you guys have done a great job, NRB, and all of our great listeners lighting up the phones there on Capitol Hill to make your voice known. You know, Troy, I think a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with the mission of National Religious Broadcasters and the great work you guys are doing there in our nation's capital. Tell us a little bit about the mission of NRB.
Yeah, look, the top role of NRB is we are the chief advocate for Christian communicators in the government spaces. So we look and follow all the legislation that's going through. We also keep track of what's going on in the regulatory departments, particularly the Federal Communications Commission and the Federal Trade Commission. One of those controls all the broadcasters. The other one oversees all the things that are going on the internet, including streaming. And just various employment regulatory environments as well. So, and we advocate to keep Christian communicators in the public space. That's the chief work we do. We also work on a number of issues, including our international advocacy that works on Christian persecution, anti-Semitism, and religious freedom around the world. So we have a lot to do these days, Todd. There's no shortage of work.
No, and I think a lot of people get lulled into this, I don't know, a complacency, I guess. You know, President Trump is in the White House, religious liberty is being protected, people of faith are being protected, religious broadcasters aren't coming under attack. And yet, there could become a time in the near distant future where, you know, we may not have a faith-friendly president in the White House.
Well, look, we do have a faith-friendly president now and a faith-friendly administration, but a lot of the work that this administration has done, especially in these areas, could be easily overturned by the next administration that could be hostile to faith. And look, we've seen that in the last administration that weaponized the government against people of faith, against Catholic pro-lifers, against Protestants all across the board. But Todd, also we have not not just the government. We have corporate America that we battle with a lot in advocacy, because especially the social media platforms and those folks often have a very negative bias, a bias against Christians and Christian communicators and our message. So that's another area we work hard in, as well as constantly combating the mainstream media and entertainment industry.
Is that a, I mean, and again, when you look at the power of, you know, Christian radio and Christian broadcasting television, I mean, we're talking about powerhouses here, and I know there are a lot of things that are happening in the digital space as well. Our good friend Jack Hibbs from Real Life Network launching a massive OTT platform. That's going to be exciting to see the explosion of those kinds of ministries in the digital space as well.
Yeah, Christians have been on the forefront of a lot of innovations and getting the message out. You know, we're commanded to take the gospel into the whole world. So that's a great driver for us to be in these new emerging markets. And Pastor Hibbs and his group has done a fantastic job in their Real Life Network. There are other groups as well working on this. There are a number of ministries that get on platforms like Roku and other streaming systems. So Christians are out there. They're going to stay ahead of the curve. We help them with that. We're constantly educating on where technology is going and how it's moving and how they get involved. So it's important for us because, again, we have to do this not only because we want to be where the audiences are, but we have a very hostile corporate America against the Christian message.
Well, no doubt about that. And I know we're excited. We're going to be making some announcements concerning Real Life Network and our partnership with them. And it's getting the message out there. And unfortunately, the national media, and we've even seen this in some conservative media, are just not friendly to people of faith and the message and the position that we take on some of the big culture war issues of the day. So we've got to make sure we do have those platforms. And I think that's what you guys at NRB are doing, is making sure that those platforms are defended and protected.
Not only absolutely, Todd, that's exactly what we're doing, making sure they're protected, they're defended, making sure our ministries know how to get involved, how to launch them. But also, Todd, as you said, that the mainstream media is not just hostile to the Christian message. They often don't report on anything that goes on into the Christian world. And Christian persecution is a major message that we could tell you that the mainstream media ignores going around. You didn't hardly see the Nigerian persecution that has cost thousands of lives. Even this past weekend, there were several hundred Christians that were murdered, villages that were raided. You don't hear that in the mainstream media anywhere. Nor, Todd, do you hear all of the work that Christians do and the charity that they do across this country. Christianity is either marginalized, ignored, or villainized by the mainstream media.
Well, we're proud to be members of NRB, and Troy, just appreciate the great work that the entire organization does, but you especially, because you have really been an incredibly effective voice getting our message out there in the public marketplace, and we really do appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Todd. I do appreciate that, because we're working hard because your program and people like you, you're on the front lines. You're out there every day bringing that truth. And by the way, Todd, a year ago when we did a Barna survey, 66% of America, two-thirds of America said that Christian media, people like you, were valuable and trustworthy. And mainstream media, that's in the low 20s, if not the teens. And so it's an important role we play, and it's an important message we play. And we're often the only ones bringing the truth to the audience in America today.
All right. Well, Troy, we're going to have to leave it there. But again, great work. NRB.org is the website. That's NRB.org. And I know we have a lot of church folks that listen to us. Maybe they're involved in digital or broadcast ministries. They're invited to be a member at NRB as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. Anybody who's involved in communicating, getting their message out, whether it's streaming out of your church, you should be a part of NRB. You can go to nrb.org and find out how to become a member and all of the issues that we're working for on your behalf.
All right, Troy, good to hear from you, my friend. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, sir.
All right, there you have it. Troy Miller, a president and CEO of National Religious Broadcasters. So be sure to go and check out their great website, nrb.org. And especially if you're involved in a church or a ministry, what a great organ. If look, set aside all the important things they're doing, but also the fellowship and the opportunity to hang out with like-minded broadcasters and creators, content developers. It's really one of the most wonderful organizations out there. Cannot say enough good things about NRB. All right, 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. I do want to get to the phones here. We've got Tom in Houston listening to us on Patriot Talk 920, wants to weigh in on New Jersey voter fraud. Hi, Tom. What's on your mind?
Hello there, Todd. I saw a news thing, a breaking news on my Facebook feed, and sure enough, it's disappeared after a little bit of time here. But the gist of the article is that IDMIA, I believe, is the contractor that the New Jersey DMV used to do the registration of individuals. And they are calling Mickey Sherrill's accusation of computer error false. They are claiming that the votes of 6,000 illegal foreigners was not part of their computer error. And its title is breaking news, but it said 15 hours ago. And I am just amazed that the media system, which censored President Trump's speech, is not hollering from the rooftops about this new development in the over 6,000 illegal voters in New Jersey. Are you?
Well, yeah. So we've been covering this story. We covered it pretty much in depth in the first hour of the show. And as far as I know, I think just about all the media is picking up on this, but they're not understanding, you know, the timelines. And I think a good buddy of mine, Lars Larson, hosts a show later in the afternoon. And Lars did a great job of the timeline of when all of this happened. And the bigger question is why Democrats in New Jersey did not address this when these fraudulent voters were first discovered. That to me is the bigger issue. But yes, 6,600 non-citizens added to the voter rolls. And they're saying nearly 400 cast ballots. I guarantee you that number is a lot larger than 400, Tom.
Well, I apologize to you. I worked second shift, so I just woke up 30 minutes ago.
Tom, don't apologize. You're catching up on the news. Yeah,
I'm sure that David Muir will have the story as the lead story tonight on ABC News. That's the way it is.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, and that's a very nice accent there, my friend. It was sort of like a Walter Cronkite, Howard Cosell fusion. All right, Tom. Wake up, my friend. Grab some breakfast and start your day. And I hope you have a great one. 901-260-5926. And good morning, everybody, if you're just waking up. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, let's go to Johnny in Texas, listening to us on Patriot Talk 920. A lot of Houston listeners today. Johnny, before we get to the chickens, how are things going? You guys have that big tropical storm headed your way.
Yeah, that's what they're telling us anyway, Todd.
All right, so batten down the hatches. You guys, I mean, this is like a windy, rainy day for you guys. Y'all know what to do down there when it comes to the
right
storms.
Now it's the heat wave.
Well, there you go. Send some of that rain up to Memphis.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I'll sit there and pray a little bit for you.
All right, Johnny, let's talk chickens.
Okay, I'm a raised exotic chicken, and that woman was partially correct. Chickens is the term for the bird, not for the sex of the bird. A pullet is a female that hasn't laid eggs. And a hen is a female that has laid eggs. Roosters are roosters. So partially right. Calling chickens chickens is male or female.
Dylan, you're crowing over there.
I am crowing. Yeah. I feel like I'm justified now that I said chickens.
Okay. So
I wanted to justify him because he was right.
I have a question, though, about these exotic. What is an exotic chicken?
Well, I raise these chickens that have black bones, black meat, black feet, black beak, black eyes. Entirely black. They're from Indonesia.
I see. And they're exotic. Do they come with names like Cinnamon or Velvet or Vixen? Like, are they that exotic? Like,
well, their name is Ayam Samani, Cemani.
Oh.
Totally black. People buy them just to see if the meat tastes any different, but it doesn't.
Interesting.
They pay pretty good price for a bird will run you, a full-size bird will run you about $1,500.
Oh, my gosh. I'd rather go through drive-through at KFC.
Yeah, I imagine.
A lot cheaper.
Yeah, I sell the chicks straight out of the moment they hatch for $50 a piece.
Is that right? Okay,
yeah,
wow.
I'm perfectly happy doing that. I sell as many as I can hatch.
John, well, you're a good man. Yeah, I would be, too. That's good money right there.
Yes, sir.
All right. Johnny.
I had one other thing I wanted to say, and I didn't get to tell the caller, but the reason I was going to text you, but my phone didn't show your phone number.
I've got 10 seconds. 10 seconds, Johnny. What is it? Because we got to take a break.
I know there's not a lot of billionaires and trillionaires that are not against being people of faith. How come they hadn't come together, those that are, and bought a TV station?
Well, that's a good question, Johnny. Well, you know what? We'll take a look at that. Got to take a break right now. I'm glad he clarified. I was thinking exotic chickens, you know, maybe stripper poles or, you know. So thank you for clarifying that, Johnny. We'll be right back. Exotic chickens. Dylan, I kind of feel bad. I mean, poor Johnny over there hauling in, what, $1,500 for his exotic chickens, and my mind immediately went to the gutter.
Yeah, me too. It's just the way of the world. That's, I mean, what are you going to do? Exotic chickens, you think a chicken named Cinnamon Roll.
Lollipop. Jeez. A big-bosomed bird named Lollipop. Or Beatrice.
Who knew they did more than just laying eggs?
Hello. Well, I mean, oh, jeez. So I'm checking out this bird. Did he say it was from Ethiopia, or where was he saying it was from? Ethiopia?
I think so.
No, yeah. Ethiopia, those would be scrawny little birds.
No meat?
No, just skinny little
That's
birds.
Terrible.
Indonesia is what he said. So I'm looking these birds up, and he was not kidding. These things are, yeah.
So everything is black.
Everything's black. Yeah, they're black birds.
Wow.
I mean, so what is the exotic chicken like? Show a little beak or show a little, you know, show a little, I don't know. I have lost control of the show. That's what bothers me about this segment. But anyway, so there you go. And how did we get off on this tangent in the first place?
I think because the man on the subway made out with the chicken. I wanted to know if it was a girl or boy. Then we got clarity on that one.
So according to ChatGPT, well, you can take this for what it's worth. The black chickens are actually very good to eat. I'm a white meat guy, and not that, does that make me a racist? I just like the white meat of the chicken.
I would try it. I'll try it for you, Todd.
You would try it.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
You know, we've crossed the Rubicon when Chick-fil-A offers their, you know, black chicken sandwich. You know, they've already done the cauliflower thing.
Yeah, I mean, but if it tastes the same, like, I don't know if it would even matter. But I don't know if they would do that.
Oh, here we go. They're from Indonesia, not Ethiopia. My apologies. Indonesia, they have a dominant gene that causes hyperpigmentation, making the chicken mostly black, including the feathers, the beak, and internal organs. You know, a lot of people eat the feet. Did you know that?
I do know that.
Chicken feet.
I don't know why they do that.
And, I mean, here in the South, people, they really enjoy what the pickled, you know, pig's feet, pickled pig snout.
We take advantage of every single part of that chicken. Like, there's no part that goes uneaten.
Careful with the word we.
We as in the South. does that a lot.
You walk into an old country store, you're going to see something big and pickled on the counter.
It's always pickled.
Right, it is. Have you ever had the Kool-Aid pickles?
No.
I know somebody in the Mississippi Delta, which we broadcast on a number of stations in Mississippi. But this is a, you should Google this, Kool-Aid pickles. It is a delicacy in the Mississippi Delta. And you find those big jars of pickles. They're like, you know, 15-gallon jars, right? And you have the pickles, and then you pour Kool-Aid, you know, the Kool-Aid mixture into the powder. You pour it into the pickle juice, and you get the whole sweet and sour. But, Dylan, here's the frightening thing. The pickle takes on the color of whatever the Kool-Aid is.
Yeah. I'm looking at a red pickle right now. And that would surprise me if I was thinking it was a watermelon.
Yeah, I'm
I
not eating like a, that. I'm not eating a purple pickle.
No.
Yeah,
you don't want to do that.
No, I can't do that. I can't. No black chickens, no purple pickles. I think I may be racist.
It sounds like they call them coolicles. Is this true?
Coolicles? I've heard.
There's got to be a better name.
I've heard them known as Kool-Aid pickles.
Yeah, that's better.
And it is a huge popular thing in the Mississippi Delta, along with tamales, which you would not think would be a big Mississippi thing, but apparently tamales are a big thing in the Delta.
I like a good tamale.
Yeah. You ever been to Corky's?
I have.
Barbecue? They have good tamales there.
Okay.
All right. Speaking of that, the diarrhea lettuce is getting worse. There are now multiple cases being reported in the Memphis area. So just be upwind of wherever the outbreak is.
Don't be close to me. I don't eat lettuce. I'm not starting now.
Don't. I still can't get over it. People just, they were like frozen. There must have been five or six people frozen staring at the lettuce.
Yeah.
And you could tell they were calculating, do I risk it? And here I come just marching in and grabbing it and going.
I guarantee you they were Googling, is this the bad lettuce? And they were taking a picture of the brand.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
That's exactly what, you know what? That's exactly what they were doing.
And you just don't care. You just walked right in there.
I don't care. If I'm going to, you know, if I'm going to keel over,
you've been through enough.
I got more drugs in my system. I'm good. I got plenty of antibiotics. Bring on the Taco Bell. Give me a chalupa. All right, 901-260-5926. I have not had the Kool-Aid pickle, by the way, so I am curious if anyone has had one of these. I'm curious to know what they taste like, but I was channel surfing last night, Dylan, and I don't know why I came across the Great American Food Truck Race, and now I'm addicted to that.
Yeah, that's a good show.
It is a good show, and there was a team from Memphis, one of the Asian restaurants.
I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Fortune Cookie.
Yeah, they were at the, we have a Memphis Botanic Gardens here, and they were there. It's so good.
It looked pretty amazing.
It's very good.
So, this story from Mediaite, ladies and gentlemen. We're having such a pleasant conversation about Kool-Aid pickles and multicolored chickens. I really hate to spoil the moment, but Tommy Lahren, from Fox News, very upset at the Trump administration. And here's the reason why. We've been telling you that something's up with the mass deportations, and I don't think they have been as mass as they have been telling us, and it turns out that is actually true. So we decided to run the numbers here. So ICE has now reported officially they have deported 356,000 illegal immigrants in the fiscal year 2026, all right? They originally told us they were going to be deporting about 3,000 a day. Then Mark Wayne Mullen came in, and this is some breaking news here. Mark Wayne Mullen came in, our new Homeland Security Secretary, and he said they were dropping those numbers down to 2,000 a day. But when you actually run the numbers, they're only deporting about 900 people a day. And I think a lot of folks are just now beginning to wake up. Tommy Lahren said, I thought the administration stood for America First and the American worker. As a Trump voter, I know I don't give one blank if big corporations, if they maybe lose, if they risk losing their serf labor class to rightful deportations. All of this, quite frankly, is infuriating. Lahren says she's a big fan of the border czar, Tom Holman, but has a problem with how immigration officials have reported deportations, adding there seems to be some fudging with the numbers going on. Well, we've been saying that. We need to tell Tommy to start listening to the show. She would be informed on all of this stuff because we've been talking about this for ages. When somebody crosses the border, this is Tommy speaking, when somebody crosses the border and they say, no, 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 go back, they count that as a deportation or an arrest. Well, that's insane. Can't be doing that. So anyway, all that to say, the administration is not deporting the numbers. Now, they said they were deporting 3,000. Obama was deporting 8,000 a day. Just to give you some context here. So here's where we are. And if you're taking notes, it's not a good place to be. So they're talking a good game, but are they delivering on the promises? I know I mix metaphors there, but are they delivering the goods here? You know, they made a lot of promises to us, but are they just blowing smoke now? Not to mention the fact that we've got a full-blown war, and there's no telling when that's going to end up or how much that's going to cost us. But here's the reality. We're in a war. We can't just leave our soldiers high and dry. We got to make sure they have everything they need to fight the war, which we thought was already won. And we've got to destroy all of the stuff that we were told originally had already been destroyed. So there you go. It's folks getting a little frustrated out there. Folks getting a little frustrated. And certainly the House of Representatives, they are very concerned about the continuation of the war. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. President Trump leaving Dover. And this is just classic Trump. So the president found out the family of one of the fallen soldiers from the Army, First Lieutenant Tyler Feehan. His family was going to Georgia. They live in Georgia. And the president was going to Georgia, so he offered to fly them on Air Force One. And so that's what they're doing now. The president taking Air Force One to Georgia to bring the family members back home. And that is certainly the compassionate side of President Trump. God bless you, Mr. President. All right, we've got to take a break here. 901-260-5926. A reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you pre-order a copy of The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America, my brand new book, if you pre-order before August 11th, you will receive a special unpublished chapter of the book. We will send that to you. All you have to do is give us a call. That number, 901-260-5926. This is The Todd Stearns Show. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Dylan, we're starting to line up some of the big events. Very excited. We'll be launching the book at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills in Southern California. And I'll be speaking at all three services here at Calvary Chapel. That's where Jack Hibbs pastors. So heading down to Southern California, then we'll be doing another event that night. So that's Sunday morning, three services back to back to back. And then we'll be at another large church in the Southern California area, back to Memphis, and we'll be doing our big we'll be doing a big book launch party as well. And just got off the phone with the folks that are going to be helping us out with that, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We may have to try to do something. We'll entice some of our long distance folks to drop by for the big book launch party.
Yeah, we should. And we have to throw a flapper party because that's what it has to be.
You know, I was talking to the Real Housewives of Germantown, and they're adamant that this has to be a dress up, you know, 1920s flapper style party. You know, guys, you got to wear, you know, dress up and everything.
I don't see why not. just make a whole thing out of it.
Yeah, may as well.
The book is very Great Gatsby looking.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I was going back through. I'm getting right. Oh, by the way, I've got to record the audio. I've decided to do the audio version.
Okay.
We had that debate last week or this week or whatever. And so, but anyway, I'll be, and I was going through looking at the, it's just a great read. Such great information. One of the things we did a little different is we actually took episodes from the national radio show and crafted those as some chapters in the book. And it sort of gives you sort of a real-time feel. For example, when I knew I wanted to write about the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And so we decided to basically take that moment as it happened in real time on the radio show, and we repurposed that for the book. So just to kind of give people a little bit of a feel of what the book is going to be about. So it was a lot of fun. A lot of folks. It's the end notes, like 20 pages of end notes. So just a lot of sourcing material for the book, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. By the way, Dylan, I was, you know, we had little Starnes, who is now bigger than all of us, but then we have baby Starnes, who is the youngest of us.
And he's also not a baby.
No, he's not. And he came into, I got a text, you know, the kids, the teenagers, they're all busy doing other stuff. They don't hang out with us old fogies. And you're an old fogey now,
Dylan. I guess so. I hate this. Yeah. Keep going.
So anyway, I got a message. Hey, can I come over? I need to film like a fight video. And I'm like, a what? And it turns out he's like a mixed martial artist, arts guy, and he's a fighter, and he's getting ready for his first. What is this? Is this like a professional fight?
Yes, this is a professional fight. I think this is his first one, so we're all going to be rooting for him. But yeah, he's doing the mixed martial arts. I think there's also kickboxing involved in this, so it's like a little bit of both.
This is very exciting, and I didn't realize that he had like his own. He's become like a superstar on Instagram.
I think he has more followers than all the people that I know, except for you.
But I don't know. He is. I mean, his numbers are climbing. If you're into boxing or fighting, it's Cameron Starnes. What's Cameron's? It's an MMA.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's, oh yeah, it's Starnes MMA. That's not me, by the way, in the photo. Good Lord. The kid has like he needs to put a shirt on. All right, we need to send a message.
Cameron. People fight. They have to, Todd, when you fight, you don't fight with clothes on.
No, but, well, I know, but he's not fighting. He's posing. He's the youngest. This is great. Cameron Starnes is the youngest pro fighter in Tennessee. And he's fighting at the bantamweight. I guess, is that the smallest weight?
I think so, yeah.
All right.
I could be mistaken.
Oh, it is. It's kickboxing.
Yeah.
But he's got all these sponsors. He's very like exciting. He's an influencer. Unbelievable.
And he's going to kick this guy's butt, apparently.
He's got to.
He has to.
Yeah. So are we all going? We have to go.
I think we have to go. This is his first fight. We all have to show support. I'm sure his mother is not going to be very happy. Maybe she's scared. I don't know. I had friends that fought, and all their mothers were terrified to watch them fight. So we'll see.
Wow. Baby Starnes. Starnes MMA. Yep. We need to license that, brand it.
I think he is. He has to now.
Could we, as a show, sponsor Cameron? Like, you know how they do with a NASCAR?
Yeah.
Right?
I think we could.
Liberty University sponsored a NASCAR.
I mean, you are the owner, Todd.
It's true.
So you could, you know. You can probably make that decision.
You know what we could, like, sponsor on the gloves? On one, it says liberal, and the other, tears.
Great.
This is exciting to see the next generation of the family rising up. And we fight liberals on the air, and Cameron fights them in the ring.
Yeah, we definitely missed that gene. Like, I didn't ever want to fight anybody. So
he bears a striking resemblance to my dad, who would have been his great uncle. And my dad, back in when he was in high school, was a boxer. And he was on his way to be, he was actually training for the Golden Gloves. And they did a quick little, I guess during the checkup, they discovered he had a bad heart as a teenager. And so that pretty much ended his boxing career. But Dad was a ferocious boxer here in the Memphis area back in the day.
So it does run in the gym.
It does. It really does. Wow. So, yeah, you might have a little bit of fight in you, Dylan.
Maybe. Who knows?
You never know.
I played in the band. So.
Well, you can take your, you know, guitar and, you know, yes, pound it with, true, I don't know, anyway. So anyway, pardon us as we conduct a little bit of family business, but we're super proud of Cameron and, you know, the work he's doing. And, man, he's been training and the youngest pro fighter in Tennessee. And he's our family. So how about that? All right. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. That is shockingly going to wrap it up for us. I just kind of talked out the wazoo here for a little while, and we still have a lot more ground to cover. We will do that tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, including a conversation about cross-dressing teachers in Texas. In the meantime, head over to ToddStearns.com. Be sure to check out all of our great stories, all of our great content. Get out there, crank up that AC, grab a big old picture of sweet tea, and stay cool, America.